This is the Brian Callen Show. Okay, folks. Well, this is the second installment of the Sam Brown Cancer Musical Chronicles, and unfortunately, the final one. This was where he, you know, the tumors were. I think they were. Well, anyway, he didn't know. He didn't know if they were shrinking or they were growing, but he didn't know if he had 2 months or if he had 3 years. But you can hear him talking here, and he's just a lot more positive. And so here it goes. Enjoy. All right, everybody. This is Brian Callen, the Brian Callen Show. I want to thank everybody for listening to the 10-minute podcast, which I believe is number 3 on iTunes in Canada. Oh, and by the way, like top 10 in America. We've been getting like 150,000 downloads in 3 days alone. And for that, I appreciate that, fans. For that, I appreciate that. The guy you hear in the background
is a hacking cancer patient.
Is my buddy, Sam Brown. He's not holding the microphone right now because he's loading his bong. He has cancer, and the chemo sucks, so he smokes weed to deal with the nausea. This is the Cancer Chronicles. I should say the comedy Cancer Chronicles because, Sam makes everybody laugh with his cancer. In fact, I've been very overwhelmed by the response we got from the last episode we laid down because people loved it. I thought it was really funny and sad, but uplifting and usual comments. This brings me to the issue of diversity. You don't really know what you're up against until you're up against it. You know what I mean? You know what sucks about being a human being? Is that you can walk around like a tough guy, but it's so easy to be brought to your knees. I mean, it really is. It takes a long time to build a human being and, well, very little to destroy a human being.
Is this thing on?
It sure is, Sam. How do you like my...
That's a terrific segue to Sam Brown and being brought to your knees.
That's right.
Felled by the life.
By the smiting hand of cancer. But you know what? You're not on your knees. And
it's true.
I think you've borne this, I guess in some ways a catastrophe, very, very well. And I don't like when people say, you know, things like, well, I mean, the bottom line is you're battling cancer. You got to be careful how you frame things, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I can't fucking stand defeatist thought and talk.
You're right.
It doesn't help,
especially
anybody.
With something like cancer.
Yeah.
Cancer came here to kill me, and I'm here to expunge it from my body. It will be fucking taking a beating and leaving.
There you go. Thank you very much. And you said every time you throw up from the chemo, it's a little bit of cancer dying.
That's what I tell myself. And every time I fucking throw up, every time I slip and crack my head off the mirror, every time I fall weeping into a little ball of wretchedness, I say that's the cancer dying inside of me.
It's just the cancer dying. Sam, why are you in a ball crying? It's cancer dying.
Every time I want to treat myself to a little sugary treat or perhaps a piece of greasy pizza, but I can't anymore because that's my old life that the cancer took, I say that's the cancer dying.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, when we first, the first time we laid this podcast down, the tumors were actually growing in Sam. He could feel them. And
that's
according
true.
to the doctors, this new chemo is working, and the tumors are shrinking.
The tumors are shrinking, and everybody's whole opinion and demeanor around me has changed. I am no longer the dark shadow, and I am now Rocky. They're all lining up behind me, wanting me to try every therapy known to man.
What kind of therapies are people giving you?
Given me, my masseuse Andre came over last night and he wants me to try Graviola, which is 10 times more thousand powerful than chemo.
It's called what?
If he could actually explain to me, I have no idea. It could be true and it could actually work, and I still wouldn't be able to get it because he can't say it. it could be granola or graviola, or
if you could just get what it is, if you could just fucking speak the language.
He is an incredible masseuse and a true healer and a lovely human being with a vagina and a penis.
Oh, he's a
that are well blended together into a catcher's mitt.
So he's got.
But I'm not even pleased. You know what? I'm I have now drawn my. I now know that my mother-in-law, my wife, my mother, all the people that I care about in my life that actually I want to respect and love me, are now hearing who I really am in an unfettered broadcast where I can just ramble on and say whatever the hell I want.
Exactly, and that's the point of this podcast. That's what the Brian Callen Show brings you. It brings you fucking raw, unadulterated humanity, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, you look pretty good. I mean, you lost your hair and you got a little gray around your chin, but you look good. Your eyes seem to sparkle.
I've had a lot of people tell me that I have sparkling eyes this week. Mm-hmm. Do you know why?
Why?
Because when everything around your eyes looks dead, your eyes sparkle. That's the truth. That's what cancer does. It cuts to the truth.
But it also makes you musical, ladies and gentlemen.
It makes me musical.
He's a fucking crooner.
We're both crooners. There's no way we're going to ever do this podcast without bringing musicality to it.
I think it's very important. Now, let me ask you this. You are taking, do you know anything about this chemo? You told me it's just basically like all chemicals. It's just chemicals.
Let me tell you something about the new chemo, first of all right? Doctor felt my liver last week. We did the podcast three weeks ago. And I can honestly tell you, folks, I thought I was possibly a month or two away from my demise. My throat was starting to close up. I was having to take muscle relaxants to breathe.
Why was your throat closing up?
Not certain, but basically they thought that the tumor was growing to the point where it was pressing on my diaphragm. And it wasn't that my throat was closing up, but it felt like my throat
Jesus
was closing
Christ.
Up. I had a hard time breathing and terrifying. Absolutely very, very difficult to stay positive and feeling rah-rah in that situation. And yet, you know, my doctor felt my liver. He said, this thing is growing. And he's an old-fashioned 73-year-old, awesome doctor who just goes on, you know, what he knows and what he feels. And he's not a snob or, he's not trying to prove himself to me. He's got no ego. He just goes on simple things. And his intuition was right. He got me off the chemo, got me onto another chemo. And this new chemo has side effects where you literally feel like Toad shoots his tongue down your throat. It's brutal. There's a new thing where, like, it's not new. It's new to me. Lots of cancer patients know about this. It's called, like, neuropathy or something like that. Basically, anything cold. Like, if I touch a cold can of Coke, you may as well put me in the middle of, like, 800 degrees. Somebody spilled cold water on my neck last night, and I shrieked and freaked out my whole family.
It's hot?
If I drank a cold drink with ice in it right now, it would feel like my entire throat were being frozen by, like, a special ray from the X-Men.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It is wild.
So you got to drink things that are at room temperature.
I'm drinking things that are room temperature, and I'm just trying to follow these advice of these great people, you know?
And why don't they open you up again and cut that fucking
tumor
out?
They might. I met with my surgeon today, and if it stays contained, the whole thing with cancer is, you know, is it contained? Is it in your blood? They have different points of view about it. My surgeon looks at this like a chronic disease that he's going to, you know, that they want to control and give me the best, longest life that I can possibly have. And my oncologist knows that miracles happen, and he's hoping I'm a stallion that can pull one off. You know what I mean? He's different a little bit, but it's both of them I respect, and both of them have been nothing but cool to me, and this is turning into a commercial for Cedars Sinai. Give money to Cedars Sinai.
You're not sponsored by Cedars Sinai, neither is this podcast.
Let me tell you something, man. Anybody out there that badmouths my people, the Jews, and you think we fucking suck, let me tell you something. We're not cheap at all. You want to know what Jews are? We give billion-dollar fucking hospitals. You want to go into Cedars Sinai and see what's up? Look at the plaques for all the different rooms that we're given.
That's true, man.
It is all Cookie Rabinowitz and, like,
My buddy told me. My buddy said that the people, like, he's an artist, and he goes, and he said, you know, the people that support, somebody was talking about, they were talking about, like, Nazi Germany and how the Swiss got a bunch of art, you know, from, and he said, the Jews have always had a tradition of not only being artists, but supporting the arts. He said, I'm an artist. He said, dude, I would be nowhere if I didn't have Jewish patrons, like just people who buy my art, people who support it, people who
give
throw
so much
it's,
money
it's
to
really
charity.
Yeah,
it's great. It's such a crazy stereotype, and you know, I actually believe that most stereotypes generally fall into some area of the truth. That is one that is not true, and I'm going to stick up for my people there. Well, and if you want to hunt me down,
go for it. It's not the first time Jews have been blamed for something they didn't. And they didn't really. I mean, even after World War II, there was a sort of a movement among some of the people in Poland to actually blame the Jews for the war.
Right.
It just goes on and on. So it doesn't surprise me at all that I've always known for a long time that the Jewish communities. Ridiculously active in charity, not just in the arts, but in a lot of different things. So of course, that makes total sense. They've also been on the front of the forefront of social change and medical change, and that's what you're going to be, Sam Brown. You're going to lead the way to curing pancreatic cancer. That's how I feel.
I will cure it with my mind.
No, you're turning Hindu now, dude. You're not Jewish anymore. This is so weird.
I will transform into something else. I will not let cancer win. One way or another, I don't know if I live or I die, but somehow I will get the last laugh on cancer. I don't know if I'm going to have like a fake animatronic me pop out of a cotton candy
coffin
and piss my sugary
and
urine
now,
into the crowd.
Sam Brown, sort of. That's not a cancer cough. That's just a pot cough, ladies and gentlemen.
That was both.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about the afterlife for a second, because this is actually fascinating. And when you're in my situation, you start seeking out all kinds of really interesting and fun new friends. For example, Yehuda Lubavitch, the moil of Hollywood, who has literally shaved
Yehuda,
every schmeckle.
Yehuda means Jewish, I think, in Yiddish.
His name is Rabbi Yehuda Lubavitch.
Okay.
Is his name? You know, and I don't know what his actual name is,
okay.
But that's what I've been told his name
is. His name is Rabbi Jewish.
It's so awesome when your goy friends know way more about your own religion than you, and you can take the shame from your religion and double it. I could feel all the shame of a Jew without actually knowing anything about being
a Jew.
Thanks
to Brian
Callen
and his educated point of view. Wait, now, so keep going.
I find that I have so many Christian friends that know so much more about Judaism than I do that I am ashamed.
Well, it's not that. I mean, I was a history major, so the Jews have had a profound impact on the world as you know it.
I'm talking about lesser men than you, Brian. I'm not talking about world-class global heads like yours.
That's what I like to hear. I'm a global head. Keep going about the afterlife. I'm fascinated with this.
All right, well, so I spoke to two different rabbis that I have a lot of respect for, and I am not that kind of Jew, as I said that last week. I really have struggled to go to temple my whole life. It's not something that I particularly feel comfortable about or enjoy, and I don't look down on anybody who does. I've just never found a place for myself there. But now you really are hoping for a belief system that you can connect to and believe in, that you're not bullshitting yourself. You're thinking, wow, if it's really possible I'm about to die, or, you know, I'm now taking a new look at that in a new way for the first time, what do I really believe? Do I believe anything? There are a gazillion points of view out there. There are so many things that cross over. But I spoke to two different rabbis, one who really believes that this is a random place, that the world is a random place, and my pancreatic cancer and my best friend getting killed by a motorboat were random acts that have nothing to do with God, and that the lower realm that we live in on earth and the higher realm barely intercede. And then I spoke to a Hasidic rabbi, this Moil Lubavitch, who couldn't be nicer, you know, and we just couldn't be any more different, and he could not have been warmer. He also was the Moil for my two kids. But,
what is a Moil for the people at home?
What
is the Moil for the
people at home? By the way, Moheel, for all of you who've never been able to spell Moil. They cut the schmeckle. It's a special ceremony. Even doctors have their sons done
schmeckle
by
meaning the foreskin.
The foreskin of a male boy's penis at 8 days. It has to be 8 days for some reason. I don't know why, but probably Brian, my boyfriend, can tell you.
It has something to do with Moses actually cutting his own penis to show his subservience to God. Now, the significance of 8 days, I'm not sure, but it might have been the
eighth day. If you could pull that out, I'd start Googling that shit, too.
It might have been the eighth day he was on the mountain, but I'm not sure. But it certainly was the notion that it was God. It's a very strange, strange thing, actually, if you think about it. Moses took his cock out, literally, and said, I mean, I know, it's crazy, but he said, I cut my penis in subservience to God. That is where it comes from.
I think that's what got the burning bush to burn, by the way.
If I'm wrong, please correct me, but I think I remember that from not only the Old Testament, which I read, but also from my theology class. Now, I may be wrong, but I don't think I am.
Did I tell you guys I like bubble yum? I like bubble yum and...
Sorry for referring to Moses' penis as a cock. That's
I want to talk about parachute pants from the 80s.
But go on about this other guy. I want to hear about... So 8 days. It has to be 8 days. So he's a Mormon.
So basically, you know, he's a lovely man that I've met because he's been the Moyle for my two sons. And my wife contacted him recently because I've just been reaching out to spiritual people, you know, and wanting different points of view and wanting to hear about their experience with people dying and watching people pass over and that sort of thing. And he was from a totally different point of view, one you would expect from a much more Hasidic point of view, which was basically that every deed does count, you know, from the beginning you're born. Coming into the world is an incredibly difficult thing. It's because you are coming from something before, and your soul is being born into the world, and that's in and of itself is an incredibly traumatic thing. And that, you know, heaven, all kinds of things I didn't know. I didn't realize Jews believed in reincarnation, and that their version of heaven is so profound that to try to describe it in words would be that we just couldn't possibly understand it. And it's too profound for us to understand, and that we won't. You know, I asked him, will I be able to stay behind and take care of my wife and kids if I want to? You know, are there people that can choose to stay in this realm and intercede in any way? Is that something that's an option for people? And he said the rabbis gave different answers. One rabbi said yes, and the other said it doesn't really work that way, that you won't care. You know, you're going to be so – you've moved on by then. And, but I guess we'll all find out someday, won't we?
Well, you know, that's always been sort of the great mystery, right? I mean, it's always been the notion, what happens to me after I die? Is there an afterlife? But you raised something that I thought was interesting too, which was, you know, when you're faced with this kind of with your own mortality, directly the way you are, this fight for your life, you have to fall back on a belief system. And Maurice Sendak, who wrote Where the Wild Things Are,
one of my idols who passed, Into the Night Kitchen.
Terry Gross said, do you believe in God? He said, oh, no, the war took care of that. I don't believe in God. He went through the Holocaust.
He didn't even like children.
Well, he lived through the Holocaust. And he said, my gods are Keats and Shakespeare and those people that got me through my time, what they created, the beauty that they created, the things that they created. And it was an interesting thing because, you know, you draw inspiration, you draw comfort, and you draw perspective, and you draw belief, I think, from the things that move you, the things that have been there for you in your life, and the things that have given your life meaning. I've never been a religious person. I've tried to study religion. I read the Quran. I read the Old Testament. I read the New Testament. And I've done my share of study of Buddhism and things like that. I've read a lot of Joseph Campbell, who compares the two different mythologies, the Eastern and Western traditions of myth. But
I like Richie Rich.
Richie Rich is always good too. But it's very hard to it's very hard when there are no definitive answers, I think, for a lot of us to, unless you grow up with that tradition. And frankly, not only that tradition, but the support system. For it. Otherwise, it's very hard to...
A willingness to search for yourself, too, and find it and make it true for yourself. It doesn't matter. If you have a dogmatic situation growing up and it's beaten into you and you're taken every Sunday and blah, 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 you may believe half of it, but that's not allowing somebody their own journey to come to it at a place where at the end of their life they're looking and going, this wasn't forced on me. I found this on my own and I believe it.
Well,
you know?
That's right. But that points to another point about religion that I think does have relevance. Most religions that I've read about, at least, all of them, deal with the notion that you're flesh, you are spirit and you are flesh, and that eventually you're going to have to let go of your flesh in one way or another.
I'm in the process of doing that right now, everybody.
Well, everybody is to an extent. Age does that to you. Yeah. All of it does to you. Parts of you die as you – there are many deaths that you experience as you get older, I think. You're not as fast. You're not as strong. You're not as flexible. You're not as good looking. You don't have as much hair, et cetera. Maybe what you're going through now is you're being faced with a lot of it, you know, and there's no question. But the issue becomes – I guess, this communion with yourself and how much of yourself you're willing to let go and how much of the other side you're willing to embrace. I guess that's kind of what – do you feel
for
that?
For me, the real issue is love. For me, the real issue is, will I be able to stay behind and love the people? Will I be able to help and love the people that I love right now? And do I have to leave these people?
Mm.
Or can I raise my sons from the other side? You know, can I be a part of my son's life? Can I go to a little league game and blow a ball over the fence? I mean, it's like I it sounds so fantastical and ridiculous.
No, it doesn't. And I would say that the person you are, you will always be in your son's lives, regardless.
Well, everybody lives on through other people and their memories, and I believe in all of that. But I'm talking literally, and I'm very curious about all that stuff, and yet I also have a trust in the universe that my father died when I was very young, and a lot of the best parts of myself came out of that, as painful as it was. Mm. I'm a different person having to have gone through that, and it sucked.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to go through it again, and yet I don't deny that that shaped and carved me in ways that were good.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think? It just kind of made you...
Makes you more compassionate. It makes you realize that life is short. It makes you... For me, it made me go for my dream and not settle for something that I knew I wasn't going to be very good at.
Mm.
You know, I could have tried to get a regular job, but I really knew I was only good at a couple of things. And I basically stuck with those.
I'm going to do stand-up.
Yeah, I said.
Where's the first place you did stand-up?
Oh, my God. First place I really did stand-up was the North Carolina School of the Arts. And I was very young, and I was probably about 16 or 17. And I did the halftime. I did the talent show.
Were you nervous?
They gave me a whole bag of Coke. Like it was like something from Scarface. They took two kids. They had a bunch of jacked up, freaked out dancers, and it was the North Carolina School of the Arts. At the end of the night, they had cops looking for me all night long, and they literally disqualified my record from the name of the school. They sent a letter to my home saying I had never gone there. I'm like, that's not possible.
Why,
I went there.
Why is that?
I'm like, because I had so infuriated them because I got so coked out of my young, stupid gourd.
Oh, so you were doing blow.
I didn't do blow. Somebody, I had never had any blow. Somebody like was like, hey, comics, want a bunch of blow? And they left like a big bag of blow for two young kids. And we're like fucking snorting blow and going out in front of 400 people. That was like
Holy
my first time
shit.
Doing stand-up.
Holy
and I killed
because
I was ridiculous.
Damn right you killed.
I killed because I made no sense. People thought it was like, people probably were like, wow, look at that.
How'd they know you were doing blow?
Look at that Coke ball on that idiot's face.
How'd they know you were doing blow?
Well, I had been doing a lot of drugs that summer. The whole school was doing drugs. It was out of control. This is like where you do acid at lunch and you fucking are sitting.
So what were you doing down in North Carolina School of the Arts?
This was a summer school.
Oh, okay.
That I went to, and I was, you know, going to be going to real acting school, and I thought I should get some actual training, try to act like a semi-professional. And I'm literally like dropping acid at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, sitting there in the quad talking to my friends, and all of a sudden I feel my hand fall like 2 to 3 feet into the ground. Like that's a typical school day, and I hope I don't
acid.
Get sued by the North Carolina
acid
by the line
your,
of
your hand fell 2 to 3 feet into the ground.
And then I watched like an elephant trunk come out of some kid Jimmy's face in front of me. I mean, it was awful. I don't know what kind of monitoring was going on down there, but it was not very effective.
And by the way, if Sam's sons are going to listen to this,
let's get back to the afterlife. Let's get back to the afterlife. If the afterlife is a more existential afterlife, and you are creating your own heaven, that everybody's ideals, values, things that they sort of throw into the mix that mean something to them, that create their own heaven, what is Brian Callen's heaven?
I've thought about that, actually, because it certainly wouldn't be the traditional heaven that you see in paintings, fat babies with wings and fucking clouds. Sounds like a bore.
A lot of glory holes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's the usual. Yeah, there are a lot of glory holes, just girls with impossible breasts and tiny waists. But, you know, the problem with that is that's carnal, and that probably wouldn't last either. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I think I've found what I really like to do on this earth, which is get better at something I love to do. And so I can't conceive of anything better than that. I guess more success. Although I don't think that necessarily, you know, I think when you achieve your goals, a lot of times you go, okay, well, what now?
And even what if it's about your soul growing though? What if about on this level and on the next level, the truth is it's all about our soul taking another leap forward.
That's the idea. That's certainly the Buddhist idea of getting closer to God. And that's, in fact, that's even like the Mormon concept, you know, getting rid of all the earthly appetites. So in the meantime, when you're on earth, don't be restrictive about your appetites. The Jews are the exact same way, especially the Orthodox. There are a lot of words in Yiddish and in Hebrew for restriction. Because that is how you condition your soul for the afterlife. The Greeks, Socrates, Aristotle talked about this all the time. You have to condition your soul for the afterlife. The idea that you have to gain command of your appetites, your sexual appetites, even your foods, your need for stimulants, all those things, and kind of face the dragon before you get to the afterlife. And why? Well, the idea is to get closer to God, to become ultimately God. That's the idea. Certainly the Buddhist idea. The whole point of being an aesthetic, an ascetic in Buddhism, or for that matter, all different kinds of yogas, whether it's, you know, Jainism and things like that, is the idea that I'm going to put myself through a great deal of physical discomfort, because I'm going to overcome that with something else, with an awakening of some kind, with the realization that I'm more than this body on this physical plane. And that's what they call Satori or awakening.
That's what this is. That's literally a perfect description of cancer. I mean, basically, you are being forced to adjust on a deep, profound, fast level constantly. You have so much stuff thrown at you all the time that if you don't become monk-like and somehow dial up quickly, something's going to take you down, and it may not be the cancer, you know. Mm. It just may be your attitude. It may be a million things.
Yeah.
It's very,
in a way, that's you're dealing with a very fierce form of yoga. I mean, it's thrust upon you.
Feels like that. I mean, it feels like a dark video game, or like you never know what's around the next corner.
Yeah, but you said something, you know, one of the interpretations of the word yoga is the intentional, the intentional stopping of the rippling of the mind. The mind is always rippling with thought. And one of the things yoga, when you get into higher practices, is the notion of still mind, quieting your mind. Then meditation talks about this a lot. And frankly, I think I've talked to Christian priests about this. Prayer is a similar thing, you know. You spoke of how all things trivial seem to melt away when you're dealing with something like this, and you have room only for love, and for connection, and for
Have room for real feelings. You have room for anger and things like that, but you don't have room for any petty bullshit. Anybody's any ridiculous anything seems 10 times more ridiculous and vaporizes in front of you. I mean, it's just lady complaining about her poodle's haircut, or not enough mayo on a sandwich, and you don't want to poke their eye through the back of their head.
Yeah, but what do you think that is? And that's interesting to me too, because it seems that human beings have a very hard time without something to rail against. You know, you get a kid who's got a lot of money and he spends half his life in and out of rehab. You see that. I mean, I've talked to a lot of wealthy people who say there's a real handicap to wealth. And people will create their own problems if they don't have problems. Freud said to I think it was Einstein. They were contemporaries, and they talked. And Einstein said, "We can't have any more war." And Freud said, "If you don't have war, they're going to turn that anger into themselves. I mean, they're going to fight themselves." It was kind of like this psychological notion.
It's really simple to me. I think this is the most simple thing in the world. I want my sons to know this. You know, I hope that this is something that they hear someday and take some value in. The truth is, when I'm in the hospital and I'm in the cancer ward and I'm talking to these nurses who take care of sick kids every day, and I'm talking to sick kids and I'm talking to the doctors and I'm talking to all these incredible people who are of service, you know, people who are of service, who really make their lives not about them but about something else that's bigger than them, they're happy. For the most part, they got a much, much better chance at happiness. People who make their life about themselves and what they can get, doesn't matter what they get, they're going to be unhappy.
Yeah,
you know, it's really, it's almost that simple.
Yeah, it's that simple.
And I am guilty. You know what I mean? I am by no means am I close to perfect. But I have found now going to all of these places where there are so many people who are of service, the parking lot attendants, the guys that park our car when we come in, they do it with such grace and love and a smile. And it's like they know they're in a shitty cancer ward surrounded by people who are dying and are taking their relatives in and are sad and or whatever. And they go out of their way to like be as kind as humanly possible. You don't have to be a brain surgeon. You can be a comic who does great comedy because you think you're making a difference in somebody's night. You know,
it
you can be
to
a you can be a toll booth operator who says, you know, gives everybody a happy good night. It's the way that you do things.
But that to me is my proof of the existence of some kind of God, some kind of benevolent force. I don't understand. I can't believe that it's just human beings evolved as social animals and it makes sense. No, there's got to be something bigger than that because your higher self comes out, like you said. You are happier when you're helping people. I am. That's who I really am. That's when I feel the best, when I'm satisfying an appetite. I always feel shitty afterwards. I don't feel like a better person.
Because there's no way to do it. There is no way to satisfy an appetite.
That's true.
You know, the only thing you can satisfy is, this sounds corny, but, you know, the only thing we can satisfy is giving to somebody else, is to love somebody else, is to think of somebody else. And I don't do that a lot of the time. But when I want to get out of a dark place, or I want to lift myself from some pity party and some misery and bullshit, it doesn't take much, you know, to call somebody who you know is having a hard time, to reach out to someone, you know, to help an old lady across the street, even though that sounds corny. I got a bunch of zombies from like a Stephen King novel up the street. I literally have a nursing home that looks like it was spray painted with piss. And people like mumbling through their dentures wearing like, you know, 3 fur coats on a 90-degree day and talking to a fucking ball that they found in the dirt. It's gross and scary, and they scare my children. My wife would like to move because of it. I went in there one day and brought them cupcakes, and it was like Fraggle Rock. They all came up around me like they were like teddy bears. They were the sweetest, most docile, you know, just dying for love, just begging for somebody to come say hello to them. And so that they all sit there and become these lonely, weird monsters who we're terrified of, me included. And it doesn't take much to say hello to someone
out. I always think that, you know, if you most of us, if you look at a wretch or you look at someone who's somebody you would criticize or somebody who's behaving in a way that you don't necessarily approve of. You know, and we do this all the time. Well, he's a drug dealer. Or say, oh, that black kid held up somebody else. It's that something. I think most of us, given those circumstances, most of us would behave in somewhere in that area. We are fucking, we were just talking about this before the podcast, but we are fragile, man. I mean, human beings are fragile machines. We're fragile emotionally, and we are fragile physically. And it's you know, unless you're given a lot of guidance for how to navigate this thing called life, you just basically have to do it on your own. I just
kicked over the COD podcast machine.
But you know what,
man? Working.
It's working. It's still working.
All right. That's a good sign for me.
Yeah. No, but I hope everybody wrote that down, because what I said is fucking brilliant.
Brilliant.
It's not typical at all. I haven't heard that before. Hey, thanks, Bri, for the life lesson there. But
let's talk about where you want to be buried or where I want to be buried.
Oh, that's a good call.
First of all,
by the way, before we do that, I'm not. You know,
I'm not
I'm
talking
not
about being buried.
Being
I'm talking about
fucking dead.
I'm right. Way back. I'm making
thank
a comeback.
You. Okay, thank you.
I'm
thank
making a comeback. I'm feeling very positive today. And
eventually, where will you buried? Where will I be buried?
I asked you where you would like to be buried. First of all,
I think I want to be cremated, and I think I want to be dropped, like just thrown in the air on some mountain. I think.
Something beautiful.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I just like the mountains.
I've thought of Kauai and things like that many times. I've thought of like a beach in Kauai.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have a beautiful Jewish wife who is going to bury me in a Jewish cemetery where you're not allowed to have any tattoos, but you can be buried with a new nose job and a poodle named Bippy. I am going to, you know, if I ended up dying early, I would basically be buried next to her bubby, who is, you know, absolutely beloved by my wife and her family. And
who's
I'm
bubby?
Sure Bubby is my wife's grandmother. And I'm sure that she would be a great person to hang out with. But the thought of being alone in Studio City up in Forest Lawn, looking over at like Warner Brothers, you know, or like the signs for the latest sitcoms, waiting 40 years for my wife to join me while I'm underground with a bunch of complaining, rotting Jews who are all pissed they didn't get cast in Charmed or something like that. This is not a normal cemetery. These are all the Jews that didn't make it, or a few that did, who are lording over the rest of them. They're like, oh, maybe you saw me on Charles in Charge. You.
The tapestry Sam Brown paints, my favorite.
Well, but think about it. Think about a cemetery of Jews in the Valley. That's where I would be headed.
I know where it is. I know Forest Lawn very well. I've been there. I've been to a funeral at Forest Lawn.
I actually found out that you could have yourself made into belt buckles or jewelry. And I genuinely, I talked to my wife even about it because I knew she would freak.
It's very Holocausty of you.
Right. I make myself into a human hair lamp.
Christ.
Sorry, that wasn't funny. There's no Holocaust.
I'm laughing. Great. No. But
basically, I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool to turn myself into like 12 belt buckles? And then I could have the people in my life jockey in terms of closeness to me.
I fucking would wear that every single day.
Wouldn't you?
I'd wear it. I swear to God, I would wear it every day. But what party? Like a piece of your skull?
No, they just take your ashes, you know, your bones, your ashes. They melt them down. They turn them into some freaky warlock looking orb.
Fucking hilarious. I'm wearing Sam.
I'm wearing my Sam Brown belt buckle.
I'd fashion you into a cod piece.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever you want it to be.
That's hilarious.
Well, I genuinely considered that, and then I thought, okay, I can't do that. No one will let me do that. I thought I should put myself in some pop brownies and have everyone eat them and not know that until afterwards.
Oh, that'd be...
Which would be great.
You can just ash up and just...
Just, yeah.
We ate Sam, everyone!
Just don't think you didn't enjoy me today. You did.
We cannibalized Sam.
I would happily do something like that. I would be cremated, although that scares me a little too. I like the idea of, first of all, I feel badly about taking up ground in general. Right. With all the earth that we're going to need in the future, I just feel like ashes are going to be the way to go.
Yeah.
How can you feel good about shoving your rotting body in a $5,000 casket?
I think you should be, I mean, I want to be cremated, I think. But then I'm an organ donor on my driver's license, so I also, you know, I also would like to maybe donate.
They don't want any mine anymore, by the way.
They don't want yours.
They don't want it. They crossed my organ donor thing off my card.
Ah, shit. All right. Well, that's true,
I guess. We don't want a half a pancreas, but thanks.
Got good news, got bad news. About a pancreas.
He's very generous and has nothing to give.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know, man. Then they might take my eyes, and you know, my father's very squeamish about that. But
I'm always worried that there's that, you know, there's a couple doctors on the take that are going to take you out about 3 minutes too early.
I know.
You got a chance to live, and they're thinking, man, that guy's got some nice cheekbones or whatever.
Great eyes. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a question. I like these questions.
Let me tell you something. My good friend, who will remain nameless, is a DA. He's one of my best friends here. If you know me, you know him. He's the LA DA. He will remain nameless, but he was on the case of the cadavers that were being sold at UCLA about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago.
Just before you tell the story, there are people that could probably pinpoint who it is if it's going to get him in trouble. Just be careful.
Goodbye story.
Yeah, because when you say that, they can.
Well, not really, because the lead witness. I shouldn't talk shit. I don't know what I'm talking about legally. I could just ramble on a bunch of stuff, get my friend in trouble, get sued.
That's right.
I'm one of the. Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having a boundary with me.
I gotta save you, my friend. Sometimes we all get a little crazy. By the way, you've got the new iPhone 4S. Does that have Siri on it?
Which is ridiculous, and I don't know how to use it.
Really?
But it's really funny.
Yeah, I'm going to get one of these.
I smashed mine. Mine fell like 14 times, and I had to finally replace it. Yeah. Let's keep talking about the afterlife.
Right, keep going.
Afterlife.
I wonder what Siri says about afterlife.
Siri, what is the afterlife, Siri?
Let's try it. Do you have it? No. All right, keep going.
Afterlife, I think the Celtics, Patriots, Bruins, and Sox would win a 7-game series to win it all every year.
You're a serious. Are you serious Celtics? And
I'm a serious Boston sports fan. If I get up there and they judge me, one of the first things they'll be rolling out is the amount of time I wasted reading about a right guard being drafted in the fifth round from the University of Mississippi that never even made the Patriots, who I spent hours following and predicting, even though I don't know how to play football or a thing about it. I have spent so much time rooting, screaming, stressing, bursting aortas.
You would have a great deal of company in heaven. There are a lot of guys that feel that way.
Yeah, a good sport. There he is, everybody. Richard C. walking right into the podcast.
Big kid. Big kid.
Richard C., everybody.
Oh, hey, pal.
Hey, say hello. You're on the air. Richard C.
What's up, buddy? Brian Callen. How are you, man?
Richard C. is having, we could actually put a little plug, is having a huge benefit for me tomorrow night. Where is that, Richard?
601 South Anderson Street,
Studio 601, tomorrow night.
I'm going to ask you some questions about muscle gain. What do you do? Are you a wrestler or a fighter?
MMA fighting.
Oh, you do a little MMA?
Yeah, teach it. Something.
Oh, you do?
All that stuff, yeah.
What's your primary discipline?
Muay Thai.
That's nasty shit.
Yeah, Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu, I think, are the two best things. And then your foundation is obviously your wrestling and, you know.
Now, were you a wrestler as well?
Yeah, I wrestled all through high school and college. That's how I kind of got my base, my foundation, and then, you know.
Where'd you wrestle in college?
Oswego State College, near Syracuse.
That's fucking good.
I went to Syracuse.
Great wrestling in upstate New York.
Yeah.
Cool.
You look like a fighter because I saw you come in and there are weightlifters, and then because the thing is you got shoulders, a triangle kind of neck situation, and then not a big chest in comparison.
He looks like one of those cartoons that got whacked into the ceiling and his feet are dangling out.
Yeah, a nightmare to fight.
Yeah.
Definitely a nightmare to fight. Muay Thai is nasty stuff, though. I've been taking a little of it lately.
Oh, yeah? Right on. Yeah, and Muay Thai is, I think, by far one of the best disciplines because if you don't have to go to the ground, you don't. You know, obviously, but you know, if you do the jiu-jitsu, but you could choke somebody out standing up too.
You know? See what you get on this podcast, everybody. You get afterlife choked out.
Talking about fighting in the afterlife, man. It's good.
Fighting in the afterlife.
Yep. That's great, man. I wish you could punch this fucking pancreatic cancer in the face. Get.
Muay Thai this shit right out of me.
I would. I mean, I've been doing everything I possibly can.
Richard C. gets the Yeoman Cancer Man of the Year Award. I don't know what Livestrong is doing, but Richard C. should have some sort of Rocky-like pewter statue of him made in the middle of the L.A. streets for all that he has done for his friend Sam Brown. You should all be so lucky to have the friend and friends that I have had support me through this cancer. And for those of you that don't have support, there are some great places out there at Cedars, at WeSpark. Having support during something like this is everything. I would not be able to get out of bed every day without the people in my life to tell me to get the fuck out of bed every day.
How do you guys know each other?
The gym. We met at the gym.
Met at the gym. What?
We were kicking each other in the face.
Yeah.
Muay Thai. We were doing a little face kicking, just warming up with some gentle cheek kicking and some eye socket
some
kicking.
Slap kicks, you know. He does kickboxing, though, so it's a little different.
I slowly tear a hamstring. That's what I do.
I was a Taekwondo guy, and my buddy is a Muay Thai guy, and I started trying to kick with my foot, and he goes, dude, you kick me with that foot like that, and I went down to American Top Team, and I was just lucky enough to roll around with – well, I got to – Thiago Alves gave me a lesson. I shouldn't say – I respectfully, he took time to literally, like, just show this – I was basically like, if he wanted to throw a blonde wig on me, he could have, right? And I kind of sparred very gently with their this 145-pounder that they're grooming to be their next big thing. And I went to just roundhouse his leg, just messing around with a Taekwondo thing, and he checked it. And that was it for me, man. That was it for me.
Shin is forget it. You know, guys don't understand. When I first got here, I was a Muay Thai guy, and I went to a Taekwondo place because there was no other Muay Thai. I couldn't find a good place, put it that way. And I got on the mat with these guys, and they were kicking me in the head like there was no tomorrow. So I blocked them, threw them to the ground, and then I got kicked him once in the leg, dropped him. He got up, and he wanted to start like a real fist fight with me. And I said, dude, what's up? He goes, we don't do that here in this school. I go, well, what do you do? I said, what are you going to do in the street when you get kicked? You know, and that was it. I quit. I went.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of places will be like, well, you got to play by our rules, and then they get a guy like you who's been on a mat his whole life and is doing Muay Thai, and it's like, no, I'm a fighter. You might be a guy who fights in the classroom, but I fight for real.
And again, don't get me wrong.
I feel a little gay listening to all this. Can I just say that right now?
Disrespect to these guys, you know, but I just told them, I said, look, this doesn't work for me. I've been doing, a different type of style, which is more practical. You know, when you get in the street, you know, you can do whatever you want in the classroom with those slap kicks, but in the street, somebody, like you said, well, check that kick, forget about it, you know.
My guess is you're from New York, right?
Yeah, originally from the Bronx, 233rd Gun Hill Road.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. There it is.
Richard C. Everybody.
But actually, it's funny because it brings up a point where you know, as men, we want to be tough. As men, we train, we fight, we watch fighting, you watch sports. And then you're facing something like this, and all that shit goes out the window. None of it fucking matters.
20 pounds of muscle just left my body after 25 years of training. My wife's thrilled. I told you, I'm lean the way she always wished. I be careful what you wish for, honey.
But that's what's so crazy about this whole thing, you know, in life is you lost 20 pounds of muscle. Your whole life you were a really strong guy, power lifter, and all that. It goes away. It just like your life.
You're humbled.
That quickly. You're
but
humbled.
That's okay. That's okay. The humility is good, and losing your vanity is good. I don't need those things to come back. I don't miss them. And that has not been hard. Right. Out of all the things that have been difficult, you know, people think, oh, fuck, you're going to lose your hair, or fuck, you're going to get skinny, or fuck. You know, you just want to feel well, and you just want to be with people. You know what I mean? If I'm feeling good, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nothing else really matters. If I'm feeling well and I'm able to have a good time and be with everybody, then that's great.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And
connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It puts things in perspective, to say the least.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, sponsoring kids for the last 10 years and stuff. I work with kids every Sunday after school. I teach at Marlboro High School, all the girls self-defense, because I was a victim of, you know, that physical abuse growing up. And, you know, again, this is something that, you know, it just puts things in perspective. You really take a reality check, especially when it's your age. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're the same age, you know, and it's like, you know, my heart goes out to him. He can tell you, you know, I try to do as much as I can for the kids and his wife, and you know, because I would want somebody there for me.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it, you know, what it all stems down to have good support, like he said, that you can't put a price tag on.
Well, that's what makes all the fucking difference. We were just talking about that. That's really what makes all the difference. I mean, you know, we were talking about what happens to you when you're all about yourself, and I've seen it. I've seen it with very successful people in this town. I've seen it with people who have a lot of money, and they have a lot of fame, and they're still all about themselves. It's a bad look, and they're my age, because I'm the same age. We're all the same age. I look a shitload younger than you guys, because I have beautiful skin. And I'm a
creams and ointments, creams not, and ointments.
It's just that, no, it's just that I'm God's favorite. But the point is this.
You're a metrosexual.
That's exactly
and there's nothing wrong with that.
Thank you for understanding that. I got to get a facial very soon. That's right. I know a couple tough guys who actually get
your facial. Your pores are looking a little large,
by
the way.
I love it. Fucking tough. He's one of the... You're one of the toughest looking guys I've seen. He fucking gets facials. That's it. I'm going to a facial. I'm getting a facial.
I do not get facials.
Now, did you guys have to talk about something? Should I pause this?
Oh, go ahead. Sure, pause it for a second.
Hold on. We'll be right back.
Facials, all right. Just a different kind.
We're inviting you to phase two of this clinical trial. It's
okay. Oh, okay. We're back. We had to take a little break there. I love that you're you have written down here. Everybody has something really funny. Everybody has a different idea of how to save your life. And then you have, when people ask you how they're doing, you know, they're king of the world compared to how you're doing either way, right? I mean, it's like, you know, how am I doing? I have pancreatic cancer. How are you? Well, I just lost my house in a fire. Not as bad as what I have. Anything else? I lost my leg to a shark. Not as bad as what I have. Anything else? I got mugged. Not as bad. My kid hates me. Not as bad. It just keeps going. So you have that one-upmanship, and I'm letting him take some more marijuana. So that it's funny how the world around you changes. People around you change the way they speak, the way they react to you, and everything else, right?
Well, people don't know how to speak to you in the first place. They treat you like the cancer guy, and they're not sure if they're allowed to speak to you like a normal person or if they're supposed to. People, I literally watch people stay like a few extra feet away from me.
I have to interrupt
like
you.
Like they're
going to
catch cancer, you've seen that?
That's retarded, by the way. That's
but have you seen that before?
No, but that's crazy shit.
It's crazy true.
But that's
people
human.
That know me.
That must be in our genes. Like, because back in the day, if you had a virus, you knew you were going to catch it. So just we have an instinct.
Like, I'm
going to
leap
away
on them and cough a fucking cancer virus down their throat.
What was funny is that you have tumors in your liver.
That is funny.
That are fast shrinking. And we were just talking to my buddy, the guy who was just on the podcast about fighting. And he's like, yeah, if you get a liver shot, you punch somebody in the liver, all the blood leaves the liver, and you fall. Dude,
I didn't need
fall,
to hear
your
that.
Legs go out. I'm like, can you not talk about liver shots with Sam right there?
Didn't really need to hear that one.
But he wasn't that sensitive about it. He was just talking.
People are not sensitive. They think, oh, I know, he's got cancer. I'll send him a giant box of cookies with a shelf life of 45 years. I will send him exactly what caused this in the first place in a giant celebratory package. Well, I got like, you know, God bless my cousin, Susan, I love you, and you sent me this beautiful package of like giant footballs and basketballs all covered in sugar icing. I literally could feel my tumors like nibbling on them as they went through my body. Like
well,
they were
sugar,
like
sugar is the enemy. Is not what you want when you have cancer.
No, that's what they inject you with to find on the PET scan whether you do have cancer.
Wow.
People assume you're wise when you have cancer. They look at you with no hair and gray little
wispy beard.
Goat beard, and they think you're wise. And you could trick them.
Yeah.
I'm not wise. I'm a wise ass.
You're a wise ass, and you're a very funny man.
I'm a lovely man, not a wise man.
Well, I think it makes you wise. I mean, I think
it does make you wise. It makes you wiser than the average idiot, I'll tell you that.
It depends on how you define wise, by the way. I'm not sure.
For me, wise is knowing when to keep your mouth shut, which is something I've never been particularly good at. Can I just say, let's just talk about my wife for a second. I'm just looking at another topic. I guarantee you, my wife has no idea that there are literally guys already lining up to probably try to fuck her over my possible death.
Your wife is a hot woman.
My wife is a hot piece of ass, and there are literally guys that will ask her out at my funeral someday for coffee.
That's bullshit. I'll be right there.
I feel like, you know, there are guys who, you know, they're Facebook friends.
Vultures
they're,
in the trees,
you know,
bro.
They're
vultures
like
in the
sending
trees.
Sending donations. They're all about, let me know if you need anything. By the way, I love the way you look in pants. I love the way you look in corduroy.
She's a hot woman,
I
Sam.
I want to own you.
Exactly.
Pretty, that's okay. Just know that my ghost might have a choice to stick around. And
if so, you'll be a crouching masturbator in the corner.
I will be like Topper. I don't know if I'll be a crouching masturbator in the corner. I might be more of like a leaping face.
Well, you'd only be a crouching
monster.
Masturbator if there was a chance you could be seen. So actually what you'd be is just sort of standing masturbator because you're a ghost and nobody can really see you.
Right, that's right.
And I hope they can't hear the sounds of masturbation. Do you hear that? Does that sound like somebody's jerking off in the corner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, let's talk about being buried underground for a second. Well, we already talked about the Jewish cemetery and being buried with a bunch of complaining, whining, bright, interesting, artistic, pro-Israel, all kinds of, you know, good cooks, you know, great loving people. You know, not necessarily the top 10 NHL players of all time, but lots of other types. More Nobel Prize laureates,
more of the cerebral type.
More of the
more
cerebral
of the
type.
Innovative
and
cerebral.
I don't have a lot to say, to be quite honest. I mean, stuck for an eternity underground with a bunch of very intelligent Jews, I would be in trouble. I would be the guy that gave everyone a slap on the back and said, go get them.
That's
you know?
Bullshit. You'll be the guy to make them laugh.
Right. Hopefully I'll be like on the roof.
Damn right, man.
You'll be the fool.
That's your strength.
Can you imagine
that's...
being buried in like a Mensa cemetery or something? They make a mistake and you're like the guy that gets
You'd
buried.
You'd be fine.
I'd be fine.
Because you're funnier than anybody in the room.
Right. Well, right. They would consider that some form of strange intelligence.
What happens when you're a guy like you is people want to be around you. So that's what would happen. You'd come
that's
and be
right.
Like, I'm bored talking about fucking world affairs
people
and mitochondria.
People
want to
be around me. The first thing the doctors tell you, by the way, when you go to visit your oncologist is don't go to Mexico. Now, I don't know what that means. I love Mexicans, love the Mexican people, love a good chimichanga.
I know what it means.
It means don't get Laetril is what it really means. It means don't go down and get some sort of peach pit Right. You know, right.
In other words, there are a lot of people out there. There are a lot of people that open up clinics down there that supposedly cure cancer. And I guess
we could do that.
I guess all the Western.
Do you realize we're working too hard? You and I should grind up a pit from a carob tree.
Dress like high priests.
Dress like Sikhs.
Create brews.
I like it.
Teas.
Yes.
And fucking sell them for $1 million.
$1 million.
It's true about the Mexico thing. And then, you know, I'd like somebody to do some studies on these clinics and stuff, because it's very easy to go down there where it's not regulated and open up something and plant some lotus flowers and wear a turban and talk about how juice is going to cure your cancer. And I guess that skipped all the Western scientists who came up, who've been working on this forever.
I would wear a barking terrier as a hat if somebody told me that was going to cure my cancer. It's like there's almost nothing that you won't listen to. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What have you found on the internet? Everything?
Well, a lot of what I've been looking for lately has been these trials. Yes, I've found everything. I mean, it's everything from like sun tea from your own urine to, you know, everything from your attitude to doing juice cleanses to
obviously
chemo.
Is this for specifically
chemo,
cancer or pancreatic?
Both pancreatic and cancer. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of herbs that are recommended. I'm on a lot of them. I've seen some incredible people. I've gotten some great acupuncture. I've met some amazing healers and really had some great work done on me.
That were recommended to you by other patients and things?
Both other patients and other survivors,
kinds
of places.
Well, what is your assessment take? What are you taking away from? Is there anything that you feel has worked or makes you feel better or anything like that?
There is no doubt that the acupuncture works and makes me feel better. There's no doubt that massage works and makes me feel better. Mm. I feel good taking a lot of the herbs, like some of the more concentrated turmerics, and I take like a black raspberry powder. The things I'm taking that I know can't do any harm to my body, that are boosting my liver, I feel good about taking. So I'm not worried if they're not working,
right.
And if they are, great. And certainly things like fish oils, certainly typical things like CoQ10, vitamin C. Vitamin D is becoming increasingly important in cancer. They're now doing whole clinical trials at universities where they're using vitamin D as the main source of chemo the main source of – I shouldn't speak – I don't know exactly what I'm talking about here, but there are full clinical trials that are being now investigated using only vitamin D. And I know for a fact that all cancer patients are deficient in vitamin D. And I was super deficient 6 or 7 months before I was diagnosed, and I started taking a lot of vitamin D, and obviously for me it was already there, but there are things that work.
How do you know you were super deficient in vitamin D?
I went and got a lot of extensive blood work done at this place called the Body Well, which is great. And Dr. Steven Carragher, and there's a plug for you. And it was great. I got a very extensive.
How do you get vitamin D?
The best way to get vitamin D is through the sun. It's 20 minutes of actual sun. You get enough sun so that you're getting sun without getting burnt. That's the best way to get it. And then, you know, you're getting it in your vegetables. You know, you're getting it from your greens and getting it from your veggies. But the best way is actually sun. And, you know, there's also, when you're on the internet, you're looking for clinical trials. You're looking for the next, my goal with all of this is to survive long enough to be the guy that catches the wave of the new drug.
Yep.
You know, to be the one that.
There was an art, today they were just releasing this pill you can take, where if you are exposed to the AIDS virus, if you take the pill, you actually will not catch the AIDS virus. They've been giving it for a long time to AIDS patients because it is essentially acts like a protease inhibitor, which saved so many lives. It just doesn't allow the virus to multiply.
Wow.
Protease inhibitors actually are they don't allow the virus to latch onto the cell, but it creates like a Teflon sort of slick to the helper T cell or something. But this particular pill, I guess. Doesn't allow the drug to multiply, and so it doesn't let it get a foothold in the body, which is pretty amazing. Yeah. So
there's amazing things going on.
That's my belief that
here's the problem. The problem is when you're the patient, phase one is an earthworm, phase two is you.
Yeah.
You know, phase one is a monkey, or you know, it's like, yeah, we, this works on a sea bass, and now we're ready to test it on you, Sam. Yeah. Ready to jump in the water? You're like, wow, I really hope that they're right, you know, because. And then the other thing about some of the clinical trials is there's a placebo factor involved, which is obviously would be, for me personally, unacceptable. There's no way I can enter a clinical trial with the possibility that I wasn't getting.
Yeah.
Bullshit. That's, I would rather go the all-natural route than take a chance on maybe chemo.
No. That's ridiculous. You'd have to actually, they'd have to use the drug. They tell you that stuff, though, Sam, before they do that. But that is what you should be looking forward to. The idea that they're going to come up, things are moving exponentially, you know, in that direction. So that's what I believe, and I believe that I look forward to personally recording a fucking podcast when you're 100%, and that's truly how I feel.
Dude, we're moving in that direction. To me, we have to take my pancreatic cancer and give it to somebody else. Like, let's give it to somebody that deserves it. You know, let's
child molesters.
Yeah. Let's just put it on their face. You know what I mean? Let's go catch guys in parks who are about to molest a kid and wrap my pancreatic cancer around their face and
just
dump
throw
them
your
in a truck.
At them? All
right. Yeah. Why can't we do that? Why can't I like flick pieces of my pancreas at people?
It's very hard, Sam. You'd have to reach inside. It's just not fucking.
I would do it.
You have to cough on them.
I can do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen.
Let's not end on me coughing my pancreatic cancer on people.
We're at 1 hour right now.
All right.
And you can close this up any way you want, my friend.
Let's see. How should we close it up? Well, first of all, thanks to you. When you're with Brian Callen, you realize you better be on your game. He's a very intelligent man. And there are long, long parts of the podcast where you just, you know, you should just be quiet and keep nodding and going, yes. Yes, I've heard of the Hungarian Revolution. I know exactly what you're talking about when you say the Mist of Ariana. I just made that up. There is no Mist of Ariana.
Well, the Mist of Ariana is... let me just check Google.
There must be a Mist of Ariana. But if there is, that would be strange. Now we have to know.
A Mist of Ariana? No, I don't think there is.
Okay, but that sounded believable. And that's all you really need to be in the world. That is what I'm going to end on, everybody.
What is that? You're going to end on what?
I'm going to go with Rabbi Yehuda Lubavitch today and what he told me. And that is that we are here, souls, learning to grow. And that what you do does matter. And that, you know, people who are being of service are happy. If you're confused about your life, try being of service. And that will often lead you from that dark place. It has in my life. I have not always done it. I have gone back and forth many times, and I have not done enough of it, and I wish I'd done more. But I can certainly say from a distance, watching people who are of service, they seem happier. So there is my nugget.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate that. And, you know, as you speak, I'm reading a very strange interpretation of the circumcision and as it pertains to Moses. You guys will just have to Google that because it's just too long and it's strange.
The circumcision of Moses, you're Googling?
Yes. Well, we were talking about that before. And
let's call Zach Galifianakis right now.
He must feel like shit.
I'm going to fucking call him live on your show.
If they ever need somebody to play Moses.
That fuckface used to open for me. He opened for me for 2 weeks in Kentucky and Virginia, everybody.
Right.
And pancreatic cancer won't even call me back. That's the kind of person he is, everyone.
Bitch. Have you called him or something?
No, but I called him a while ago.
Oh. He's very bad with calling people
back. I
don't
care. I just thought it'd fun to say on a podcast.
He's the sweetest guy in the world. He's just terrible with technology. He's like, I don't even think he checks his messages. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the Brian Callen Show. Thanks, many thanks to Sam Brown. And this is only installation number 2 of... the cancer.
As the cancer shrinks.
I call it the cancer shrinking musical chronicles.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed the Sam Brown Cancer Musical Chronicles. One of the few people on the planet that can make terminal cancer hilarious, touching and courageous and interesting and all that stuff. I know I learned a lot, so I hope you guys enjoyed and hope it moved you, because that's what it's about to me. I think I feel more alive when I'm laughing and when I'm crying, and Sam did both for me. So I hope you enjoyed it, and thanks for listening. Got Michael Rappaport and a bunch of other people coming up. God bless. I love you, Sam.